Welcome to CounselorAudioSource.net. Counselor Audio Source is a weekly podcast dedicated to the professional enhancement of practicing counselors, supervisors, and counselor educators. Look for us on the web at CounselorAudioSource.net. This week on CounselorAudioSource.net, contributing editor Dr. Jeffrey Frieden interviews Dr. Richard James, the Crater Professor of Education at the University of Memphis, Department of Counseling, Educational Psychology, and Research. Dr. Richard James discusses his work and expertise in ecosystemic crisis management, relevant for counselors working with the tragedy of Hurricane Katrina and potential threats like the avian flu epidemic.
Greetings, everyone. I'm Dr. Jeffrey Frieden, and today I'm speaking with Dr. Richard James. Dr. James is the Crater Professor of Education at the University of Memphis. He's also co-author of a book, Crisis Intervention Strategies, that's currently in its fifth printing. It has twice been a selection of the month of the Behavior Science Book Club. Dr. James is also one of the original creators of the Crisis Intervention Team at the Memphis Police Department. This is now known across the nation as the Memphis model as far as police departments and crisis intervention. How are you doing, Dr. James?
Doing just fine, Jeffrey.
Good. First, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, right now I'm a professor and have been for the past 28 years at the University of Memphis in the Department of Counseling, Educational Psychology, and Research. I'm a coordinator of school counseling, and I do a lot of work, indeed, with the Memphis Police Department, police departments across the country, training police officers to do crisis intervention with the mentally ill.
28 years is a long time. You've had a lot of experience and seen a lot of different things. What made you enter the field of crisis intervention?
Actually, I was drug kicking and screaming into it by Dr. Burl Gillen, my cohort, who's, God rest his soul, who's now in a great counseling office in the sky there, but we indeed were starting out to do something with the Memphis Police Department because of a shooting of a mentally ill person here, and he asked me to become involved in it, and one thing led to another, and then we got an opportunity to write the crisis intervention book back in the mid-80s. Nobody thought that would be much and wind up on the dusty bookshelves of the library, but crisis indeed is growing, and here we are today in the fifth, getting ready to make the sixth edition of that book, and it's been translated into for some Polish and Korean that I know of. Why those, I'm not sure, but
crisis intervention seems to be an issue for many people. Crisis intervention now has taken on many forms. We see crisis counseling in the Memphis Police Department for the crisis intervention team. We see crisis intervention being used individually for businesses. Schools develop crisis plans. Recently, it's become a lot more salient with the events of Katrina, the hurricane, and what we call ecosystemic crisis management. How is crisis management on that large of a scale different from, say, the Memphis Police Department crisis intervention team?
When we talk about ecosystemic crisis, we're talking about large systems as opposed to individuals. Now, certainly those individuals operate and are in crisis within that system. And we're talking more than when we think of systems, therapy or intervention and counseling, we generally think of families. And certainly it's true that families get in crisis when there are large ecosystemic crisis. Ecosystemic doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be a natural crisis such as Katrina. I mean, it can be any kind of a crisis. Right now in the city of Memphis, the Shelby County Emergency Preparedness Planning Committee is working very, very hard on for provision of mental health services if we have the one disaster we're most likely to have here would be a natural disaster, an earthquake, since we live in the New Madrid Fault Zone. But since we're a big medical community and there's a lot of emphasis upon that, there's a lot of concern here about bird flu and what that might mean as far as the its impact upon the total system, which would certainly be very different than an earthquake in regards to how we might deal with that. But yet, if we talk about how systems operate, why we need to be looking at that kind of wide variety of ways of doing it.
What are some of the things that we need to understand in working with a large-scale crisis? What are some of the components that entail handling a situation like that?
Well, if people heard anything about Katrina and might not think that that had much of an effect upon the people in Memphis here or mental health services in Memphis, better than 400 miles from landfall, but the fact of the matter, it did. It had a very large impact on us because we had a flood of people come in here from the Gulf Coast. I've dealt with that personally and professionally. My own daughter had her house blown away in Katrina, and so from a personal impact statement, I have my own crisis to deal with. Professionally, the wide kinds of variety that people have come in here, each demand different kinds of services. Probably one example is you would never think of, I would never think of, the first task I had was trying to deal with a American Queen, which is a stern wheel paddle boat that pulled in, had been on the Mississippi River, and up all those people around in New Orleans, the crew around in New Orleans, well, they hadn't been home in a long time. They were extremely worried about their relatives on their homes, and so that's something we would never think about, but they pulled into the landing here in the Wolf River in Memphis, and they needed help, and we had to go get them. And that ranges from when we have people coming in here, and think of somebody that's on methadone treatment, and what are they going to do if they can't get their methadone? Well, they're going to take some measures when they start having physical reactions to methadone withdrawal. They're going to do something about it, and generally that something about it, if they can't get methadone, is not going to be real positive for anybody's mental or physical health. So there are a wide variety of kinds of folks that impact a system when a crisis of the proportion of Katrina arises. The other side of that is probably communication, and really the key to any dealing with any ecosystemic crisis is having good communication, and that means whether I get on the phone and call, I'm able to call you up, or I'm able to contact you somewhere or another, and two people talking individually, to coordinating a wide variety of organizations and systems and getting help to who needs it, where and when. And probably if one thing we've learned from Katrina that we never had to deal with before is that when you have something that is that wide an impact, that you better be really sure that your communication systems are good. And very frankly, everybody knows that they weren't in Mississippi and Louisiana. They weren't very good here either. And we had several snafus and problems of using the American Queen, for instance.
What do you mean, like, they weren't very good here? How would communications in Memphis affect crisis 400 miles away?
Well, actually, most of the levee work that was done in rebuilding the levees in New Orleans was done right out of a building here in Memphis with the Corps of Engineers. So, I mean, that's one really good example of, because they had no good communication systems down there, and so they had to run it from here. Interagency communication and who's doing what, with whom, under what circumstances, and is there a redundancy in that? So if I have a building fall on me and I'm the coordinator of mental health services in Memphis, who's going to pick that up? Or if you're a coordinator of school crisis services for Memphis City Schools and a building falls on you, who's going to be in your place, and how do we know to contact that person if you're not around? And how do we get a hold of that person if indeed basic communications are broken down? So it's really a pretty critical piece of business of knowing who to talk to, where to talk to them, and about what, under what conditions, under very different conditions, and conditions that might be certainly not very conducive to ease of communications.
So in an ecosystemic crisis, and I keep using Katrina as the one that everybody understands right now, you've got individual crises from personal trauma that we would normally would expect, but it seems to have a domino effect because the person that's in trauma or in crisis is not getting help from the person on the outside, but it's made worse because of communication, lack of water, lack of medicine, and lack of telling somebody who needs what.
When we look at crisis, I think that if, even in the mental health business, for sure, we look at it from the standpoint, well, I'm going to shrink or expand your head and be there and help you out in some manner or fashion as you go through this trauma. And we know from the chrono system, if you think of an ecosystem as a series of circles and rings of ever-widening spheres of influence, from the very inside of the individual and the family, out to the neighborhood, their church, their local bar they go to, the community center, and so on, until out to the wider community, then out to the state, and that system widens out. Think of that now not just as a circle, but as a cylinder. And as you move from day one of that, or minute one of that crisis, and move down that line, then that what we call a chrono system is part of that whole ecosystemic structure. And so we need to be able to understand what happens to those people as they move through time. And we've got some theory that says fairly well what probably is going to happen to people as time progresses, in a very general kind of sense.
Is time critical as far as recuperating from a crisis of this nature? Does it matter if it's handled in 6 months or 3 years later down the line? Does it have that big of an effect on or impact on the trauma victims and the people in general?
There's a huge debate on this, and time heals all wounds. Right? Mm-hmm. Not necessarily. We don't know that for sure. If we're to believe the people that deal with critical incident stress debriefing, and there are a whole bunch of people who don't believe in that, then we'd say, boy, it's critical that you get in there and let a person talk about what's happened to them. But if you look more in the sense of kind of Maslowian hierarchical needs sense, and we really, you really do need to do that. A lot of the counselors, psychologists, therapists that went down to on the Gulf Coast found out that if you're not aware of if you're concerned about your underarm deodorant failing, you're going to have a terrible time here, because you're not going to be talking to people. You're going to be rolling up your sleeves and getting in and serving meals and getting water and doing essentially pretty basic work. We're talking about survival needs here in a very basic Maslowian sense. I'm not worried about talking about my existential outcast state here. If I don't have a roof over my head, if I'm hungry, if I don't have any water to drink, and so we have to deal with basic physical needs first.
So crisis intervention is not just talk therapy. It can be anything, applying basic needs, handling meals, arranging places to stay, things like that.
Now, one of my colleagues is that was in Slidell, Louisiana. They were getting things about calmed down after Katrina, and then Rita rolled in, and then I moved 500-600 Hispanic laborers that had been in New Orleans there, and they, none of them spoke English, and they moved them into a milieu of African Americans, the Caucasians, of people from that area, and they had some problems. They had fights. They're sticking all these people together in an elementary school, and we're talking about basic necessities.
Fighting for people come different when they're not eating, as opposed to when they have basic. I guess we saw a lot of that also in the Superdome of New Orleans. The aftermath, there was a noble cause. Everybody go to the Superdome, have a place to stay, and they were supposed to be safe there. And we saw the aftermath what happened there, that cultural differences matter.
They surely do matter, and they also matter on whether you can go to the bathroom or not, whether you can get a shower for in 2 weeks, whether you can get a meal or not, and those are grinding kind of issues that certainly can add to the trauma of the initiating crisis. No two ways about it.
A lot of times, as students of a field, we read about crisis, for example, in textbooks, and it's kind of clear cut. If this would happen, this is what we do, and we're real good at maybe handling this in a simple situation. For you yourself, when you went down in the aftermath of Katrina and worked with your daughter personally, and you were down there yourself with no communication, no water, how things were going, how did it affect you as a individual and as a clinician being down there? Did we learn anything new being that you experienced it, as opposed to, say, theories or models?
I would say probably awe in a couple of ways. That nature can do something that on that wide a scale and make such a mess of things. And that the number of people you see essentially have no homes that are in a mall lots that are rummaging through boxes of clothes just trying to get some clothes, and we're talking without regard to race, color, creed, national origin, anything you want to think of. I mean, people don't longer have any houses, and they have nothing to eat, or depending on MREs from handed out by the Army. I think that's a truly awesome thing. I've never experienced anything like that. I've been involved in a lot of different crises in my life, but nothing on a scale of that, certainly. I think the other part of it is too that the of resiliency. We wage a very large philosophical discussion on crisis now, on big disasters. Should the government be paternalistic and come in and take care of everything? Should they not? Certainly, there need to be some kind of help for the Gulf Coast and Katrina. How far that goes is a question, because people are resilient. And if we get into the cultural artifacts of this, the times when the government becomes very paternalistic and tries to institute its rules and regulations and bureaucracy on people, they're not going to like it, and they're going to rebel against them. There's two or three good studies that the people said, well, we can take care of this. And I think as people are able to, they should be able to take care of it. How you make that determination is pretty difficult sometimes.
Going back for a second, you mentioned communication, and I think that's something that we've looked at in different ways as a counselor. Communication is what we do. How would you suggest people should prepare for a future disaster? Say, for example, Memphis now is expecting the big earthquake. There's always the possibilities of damage in California. If you were now in charge, or if you were on the committee to improve FEMA, because we looked to FEMA for the model for everyone to follow, hopefully, what would be the one or two things you think we could use or should change to allow others to be prepared for a crisis?
Are we talking about surviving the crisis, or are we talking about the mental health aspects of the crisis? Because I think those are two different things, are tied together, but mm-hmm. but they're certainly two different things.
Well, you did mention that survival is more is critical. You can't talk about how you feel about an incident if you're still hungry. So
yeah, I feel like I'm hungry.
Well, crisis intervention plans, for example, in a school that we develop a crisis intervention plan, are all encompassing. Taking care of people are the main thing. So I'll put it out to you to make your suggestion first. To take care of people, what would you suggest?
I think probably that if FEMA, in its very best sense, mm-hmm. and I've portrayed FEMA in a really kind of idealistic sense, and I think they've fairly been equal to the task. Now, we can argue till the cows come home about whether they should be or should not be under Homeland Security, but the fact that the sheer magnitude of that disaster was far more than anybody could ever fathom and figure, and to deal with the absolute wreckage of the infrastructure. So when you have something like that, that makes you rethink everything that you've ever done. I think we had thought here we were pretty well prepared to receive, but actually we weren't, because we never even thought about receiving. You can call them evacuees, you can call them refugees, you can call them visitors, but all of a sudden we've got 13,000 to 15,000 people, many of them with very little resources at all in our city. And what are we going to do about it? That means you got to rethink everything, and how we communicate with people who in the mental health business, with people who provide basic social services to people. And we really hadn't thought about that very much before. We're thinking about it now. We've got people sitting down and talking to one another, and you know, my suggestion is any community of any size or any jurisdiction really needs to be thinking about this, because if they don't integrate those, they're going to have problems.
So then, is that just not just food and water, but realistically speaking, in a disaster, people won't be able to live where they're living. We've got to find a place for them to go. So if we're looking at a place like Memphis, where we could see 50,000 or 100,000 people without homes, what are we going to do with them? And there's only so many tents around. A plan would need to be where we would move them out.
Yeah, because we have a conservative estimate that if we have a boomer on a Richter scale of 7 here, that, you know, we would, first of all, because this is a river city, and not just the Mississippi, but the inner ring of the city is bounded by water, and all bridges would come down, and we'd have isolation from that. Nobody really thinks about that. We think there's estimates that probably 500,000 people on a minimum would be homeless. And the rest of the people, if it's a winter time, they're not going to have any heat and light and so on and so forth. So all those infrastructure things have to be taken into consideration. But what about the mental health that goes along with that? Certainly, as that grinds on, in a chronosystemic sense, we know that the honeymoon gets over, the next disaster arises, people move on, but yet we still got people in Florida that are living with blue roofs. And we're not talking about Katrina now, we're talking about 2 years ago. And that grinds them down. And all the kinds of handmaidens of that, the family dysfunction, use of substances to take the pain and misery away, the economic hardships, lost jobs, on, those are all degrading and wear on people as time goes on. And yet, if I can use a term I've been using this lately, it's not sexy anymore. It's not, if you went down to Katrina and right after the aftermath, while you were really doing something good and you were in there and we were shucking and jiving and boy, oh boy, isn't this great, you know, and we get a lot of notoriety of that, and are interviewing people and so on and so forth. They still need people now, and that's not near as sexy. and it starts to grind out.
It seems that on an ecosystemic basis, the crisis is long-term versus short-term. What someone might think crisis intervention is maybe a house fire or a bank robbery or a traffic accident, which we can deal with immediately and some over time. But ecosystemic, by the nature of itself, grinds on, and then we have to address short-term, medium-term, and long-term goals and therapeutic needs.
If my barn burns down and I'm a farmer, my friends, if I have some friends, and generally I would come and help me build a barn over again. That's a crisis. It means that I've got all kinds of problems with that for the short-term future. But what happens if all of my friends' barns burn down? And then the magnitude is multifold. Who helps whom then? And what are the degrading effects on that if the whole economy then is brought to a halt? And that's the difference between all the big kinds of crisis. The initiating things are probably most no different than my house catches on fire. But it's a difference after certainly a longer period of time, I think, when the whole infrastructure comes apart.
Okay, Dr. James, thank you very much. This has been very interesting. I appreciate you taking the time to meet with me today. References made on this podcast, including Dr. James' book, can be found in today's show notes. Thank you very much.
Okay.
You've been listening to Dr. Richard James, the Crater Professor of Education at the University of Memphis, discussing ecosystemic crisis management with our contributing editor, Dr. Jeffrey Frieden. Look for previous podcasts, show notes, and listener feedback on the podcast website at counselaraudiosource.net. Listeners can leave comments or questions for our interview guests or hosts through our Skype.com internet telephone ID, Counselor Audio Source, or by calling 330-871-4015. Counseling techniques and interventions discussed in the Counselor Audio Source broadcast are meant for use by counseling professionals, and Counselor Audio Source is not held liable for any use of the techniques mentioned in the program. Our music bed today is Memorial Day from Jamie Beauchamp. His and other PodSafe music can be found in the PodSafe Music Network at podshow.com. Counselor Audio Source is licensed under the Creative Commons, a nonprofit organization offering a flexible copyright for creative work.